This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, my name is Mary McConnell, and this is the second hour of the Cincinnati Inquirer. It's for Wednesday, the 7th of February, 2024, from Radio Reading Services of the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. In this hour, I will read the TV listings, the obituary notices, the horoscopes, the etc. page, and articles from Nation and World section of today's Cincinnati Inquirer. We're going to start with the afternoon TV listings, and we're going to begin with NBC Channel 5. And from 2 to 2:30, I'll make that 2 to 3, we have Sherry. It's followed by Jennifer Hudson from 3 to 4. 4 o'clock, it's WLWT News at 4. We have WLWT News at 5. That's from 5 until 6 o'clock. More news from 6 until 6:30, and again from 6:30 until 7 o'clock. Let's take a look right now at ABC. We have General Hospital. This is Channel 9, and that's on from 2 until 3 o'clock. It's followed by Kelly Clarkson from 3 to 4. Then comes CPO 9 News at 4, followed by more local news on Channel 9 at 5 to 5:30, and again from 5:30 till 6. We have news from 6 to 6:30 on Channel 9, and more news from 6:30 until 7 o'clock. On CBS Channel 12, it's The Talk from 2 until 3 o'clock. Then comes Dateline from 3 until 4. We have local 12 News at 4 from 4 until 5 o'clock. Local news from 5 until 6 p.m., more news from 6 to 6:30, and CBS News, that's on from 6:30 until 7. On CNCW, that's 12.2, it's equal from 2 to 2:30, and again from 2:30 till 3. Jerry Springer Show follows from 3 until 4 o'clock. From 4 until 5, it's Paternity. That's followed by Justice from 5 until 5:30, again from 5:30 until 6. Neighbor is on from 6 to 6:30, and again from 6:30 until 7. Taking a look at Fox Channel 19 at 2 o'clock, we have Judge Judy. She runs from 2 to 2:30, and again from 2:30 until 3 o'clock. At 3, it's Fox 19 News at 3. It's followed by Fox 19 News at 4. At 5 o'clock, it's Fox 19 Local News at 5. More news from 6 to 6:30 and from 6:30 until 7 o'clock. And looking at WKRP, that's Channel 25. It's on Caso Com. That's from 2 to 2:30. And then at 3 o'clock, we have La Misa Caliente from 3 until 4. El Rojo Viva from 4 until 5. And Casa Com Telemundo from 5 until 6. Noticias from 6 to 6:30 and again from 6:30 until 7 o'clock. PBS Channel 48, Antique Roadshow runs from 2 until 3. Masterpiece is on from 3 until 4 o'clock. Finding Your Roots is on from 4 till 5. We have To Be Determined programming from 5 until 6 o'clock. At 6, we do know it's BBC World News. And then comes The Day from 6:30 until 7 o'clock. Looking at NBC Channel 2, it's Pictionary. That's from 2 to 2:30. Jeopardy from 2:30 until 3 o'clock. At 3 o'clock, we have Dateline. That goes until 4. First at 4 is on from 4 to 5. 5 on 2 is on from 5 until 6 o'clock. Then comes the news from 6 to 6:30 and again from 6:30 until 7 o'clock. On CBS Channel 7, it's The Talk. That's on from 2 to 3. Let's Make a Deal is on from 3 until 4. We have 48 hours from 4 until 5 o'clock. News runs from 5 to 5:30. More news from 5:30 till 6. News continues from 6 to 6:30. And then it's CBS News from 6:30 until 7 o'clock. On Channel 14 PBS, we have Knitting from 2 to 2:30. Cooking is on from 2:30 till 3. Funny Women, it's on from 3 to 4. Then comes Eleanor from 4 until 4:30. Wild Kratts from 4:30 till 5. Daniel's on from 5 to 5:30. Rosie's is on from 5:30 until 6. Work It Out, 6 to 6:30. And then Donkey from 6:30 until 7. On Channel 16, we have Baking. This is a PBS station, and that Baking runs from 2 to 2:30. House is on from 2:30 until 3. Forces of Nature, it's on from 3 until 4. Finding Your Roots, that's on from 4 until 5 o'clock. We have Programming to Be Determined from 5 until 6. PBS News Hour, it's on from 6 till 7 o'clock. On ABC Channel 22, it's General Hospital from 2 until 3. Barrymore is on from 3 until 3:30, and again from 3:30 to 4. At 4 o'clock, we have Kelly Clarkson. That's on until 5. A couple of Judge Judy's follows from 5 to 5:30, and again from 5:30 till 6. We have News from 6 to 6:30, and again from 6:30 until 7 o'clock. Looking at CW, and that's 26, it's Karma from 2 until 3 o'clock. Then we have Jennifer Hudson from 3 until 4. It's followed by Mom, couple editions, one from 4 to 4:30 and again from 4:30 till 5. 5 o'clock, it's Housewives, again Housewives at 5:30. Goldbergs is on from 6 to 6:30 and again from 6:30 until 7. We have Chicago Fire on ION, that's Channel 43, and that's from 2 to 3 o'clock. Chicago Fire continues from 3 until 4. More Chicago Fire from 4 until 5. Chicago Fire from 5 till 6, and again from 6 until 7 o'clock. And finally, on PBS Channel 54, we have Odd Squad. That's from 2 to 2:30. Arthur follows from 2:30 until 3 o'clock. We have Baking from 3 to 3:30. House from 3:30 to 4. Various Programming from 4 until 5. Finding Your Roots is on from 5 until 6. BBC World News, it's on from 6 to 6:30. And we have Kentucky News from 6:30 until 7. And we continue with the TV listings from the Cincinnati Enquirer. And again, this is for February the 7th. And we start at 7 o'clock in the evening with Channel 5, where we have local news from 7 to 7:30. Access Hollywood follows from 7:30 until 8 o'clock. Chicago Med, that's on from 8 till 9. Chicago Fire is on from 9 until 10. 10 o'clock, we have Chicago PD until 11 o'clock. At 11, it's WLWT Local News till 11:30, and then The Tonight Show. On CPO Channel 9, we have news from 7 to 7:30 local. Extra is on from 7:30 until 8 o'clock. Then comes The Conners from 8 to 8:30. Not Dead Yet is on from 8:30 until 9. Abbott Elementary follows again on Channel 9, and this is from 9 until 10 o'clock. Judge Steve Harvey is on from 10 until 11. CPO's local news from 11 to 11:30, and then comes Jimmy Kimmel Live. On Channel 12, that's WKRC, it's Inside Edition from 7 to 7:30. Then we have Entertainment Tonight from 7:30 until 8. Price is Right at Night is on from 8 until 9 o'clock. Let's Make a Deal. Primetime is on from 9 till 10. FBI True is on from 10 till 11. We have local news on Channel 12 from 11 to 11:30, and then The Late Show. On CINCW, that's 12.2, we have Family 7 to 7:30, and again from 7:30 until 8. Wild Cards is on from 8 all the way to 9. We have Family Law from 9 until 10 o'clock. National Desk is on from 10 until 11 o'clock. And the National Desk continues from 11 all the way through midnight. On Channel 19, WXIX, it's Wheel of Fortune. That's from 7 to 7:30. We have Jeopardy from 7:30 till 8. I Can See Your Voice is on from 8 until 9 o'clock. We Are Family is on from 9 till 10. Fox 19 News at 10 is on from 10 to 11. More news on Channel 19 from 11 to 11:30. And then comes Friends. On WKRP, Channel 25, La Casa de los Famosos is on from 7 until 9 o'clock. Then comes Volvo O Mio from 9 to 10. Amor Impossible is on from 10 to 11. Noticias from 11 to 11:30 and again from 11:30 until midnight. On WCET, Channel 48, we have the PBS NewsHour from 7 until 8 o'clock. It's followed by Nature from 8 until 9. We have Nova from 9 until 10 o'clock. Secrets of the Dead follows from 10 to 11. Amapour and Company is on from 11 through midnight. Channel 64, Minette, Big Bang Theory, 7 to 7:30. Young Sheldon from 7:30 until 8. We have Dateline from 8 until 9 o'clock, followed by more Dateline from 9 until 10. Local 12 News is on from 10 to 10:30. Again, this is on Channel 64. Then we have Big Bang Theory from 10:30 to 11. Young Sheldon from 11 to 11:30. And that's followed by Two and a Half Men from 11:30 until midnight. On Channel 2, it's Inside Edition from 7 to 7:30. Then we have Jeopardy from 7:30 till 8. Chicago Med, that's on from 8 until 9 o'clock. Again, this is on Channel 2. Chicago Fire is on from 9 until 10. We have Chicago PD from 10 to 11. And then News from 11 to 11:30, followed by The Tonight Show. On Channel 7, CBS, it's Wheel of Fortune, 7 to 7:30. Entertainment Tonight is on from 7:30 until 8. From 8 to 9, it's The Price is Right at Night. And then from 9 to 10, we have Let's Make a Deal Primetime. At 10 o'clock, it's FBI True. At 11 to 11:30, we have The News, and then The Late Show at 11:30. On Channel 14, PBS, we have DW News from 7 to 7:30, followed by The News from 7:30 till 8. Extreme Railways is on from 8 until 9 o'clock. American Masters follows from 9 to 11. And then comes the BBC World News, followed by DW News. On PBS Channel 16, it's The Day from 7 to 7:30. Europe runs from 7:30 until 8 o'clock. We have Nature Flyaways from 8 until 9 o'clock. Nova Easter Island is on from 9 until 10. Secrets of the Dead follows from 10 to 11 o'clock. And then programming to be announced from 11 through midnight. On Channel 22, that's an ABC station, Family Feud is 7 to 7:30. Family Feud continues from 7:30 until 8 o'clock. We have The Conners from 8 to 8:30. Not Dead Yet from 8:30 till 9. Abbott Elementary follows from 9 until 10. We have Judge Steve Harvey from 10 to 11. Then comes the news until 11:30, and then Jimmy Kimmel Live. On 22.2, that's a Fox affiliate, Big Bang Theory from 7 to 7:30. More Big Bang from 7:30 until 8. I Can See Your Voice, that's from 8 to 9. It's followed by We Are Family from 9 to 10. News from 10 to 11 o'clock. Crime is on from 11 to 11:30. And then we have Family. On CW, that's Channel 26, we're looking at Young Sheldon from 7 to 7:30. And again, from 7:30 until 8. Wild Cards is on from 8 until 9. Family Law is on from 9 until 10 o'clock. We have the news from 10 to 10:30, followed by more news from 10:30 till 11. And then a couple of editions of Friends, one from 11 to 11:30 and the second from 11:30 till midnight. Looking at ION, that is Channel 43. It's Blue Bloods from 7 until 8. Blue Bloods continues from 8 until 9, again from 9 to 10. We have Blue Bloods from 10 to 11 and from 11 till midnight. And let's wrap things up television-wise with Channel 54, that's a PBS station. And from 7 until 8 o'clock, it's the PBS NewsHour. America Outdoors is on from 8 until 9. Nature follows from 9 until 10 o'clock. Secrets of the Dead is going to be running from 10 until 11. It's followed by BBC World News from 11 to 11:30. And then comes Kentucky News. And that wraps up the television section for today. We're going to move on to the obituaries now. And again, this is from the Cincinnati Inquirer. And it's for today, February the 7th, 2024. Emma Balsley passed away at 74 years old. She lived in Hooven, and she died on the 3rd of February. Dennis George Funeral Home handling the arrangements. Janet T. Bishop was 66. She lived in Anderson Township, and she passed away on the 3rd of February. T.B. White and Sons Funeral Home handling the funeral. Jeanette Carter was 87 of Anderson Township. She died on the 5th of February. T. T.P. White and Son's Funeral Home handling the arrangements again. Konstantinos Kondosis of Indian Hill was 89, died on the 31st of January. Thomas Justin Memorial handling the services. James Deeds Sr. was 79 of Milford. He died on the 2nd. His funeral is being arranged by John H. Evans. Rosalie Dinkelocker was 86 of Cincinnati. She died on the 25th of January. Arlington Memorial Gardens handling the services. Bobby Joe Drennan was 87, resided in Houston, Texas, and died on the 1st of February. Webster Funeral Home handling the funeral. Margaret Hacker was 98. She lived in Whitewater Township. She died on the 2nd of February. Dennis George Funeral Home handling the arrangements. Thomas Hellman was 67. He lived in Chicago, died on the 31st of January. Radel Funeral Home handling the services. Sister Mary Jane Kreidel was 83 of Cincinnati, died on the 2nd. Tufts Schildmeyer Funeral Home handling the arrangements. Sue Lane was 84. She lived in Blue Ash. And Mihok Rosenacker is handling the arrangements. Carol Linneman was 84 of Cincinnati, and she died on the 31st of January. Radel Funeral Services. Joyce Ann McLaughlin was 79 of Batavia. E.C. Knorr Funeral Home is handling the arrangements. She passed away on the 3rd of February. Timothy Tim Ryman was 30 of Cincinnati, died on the 2nd. Radel Funeral Company handling the services. Barbara Jo Sala was 81 of Cincinnati. She passed away on the 3rd of February, Weill Kahn Funeral Home handling the services. Annette Shea was 98. She lived in Cincinnati and she passed away on the 3rd of February. Gilligan Funeral Homes handling the arrangements. Joseph Bruce Turner was 21, lived in Cincinnati, and he passed away on February the 4th. Fares J. Radel Funeral Home handling the services. And Paul R. Rensel was 74 of Sailor Park, died on January 25th. Brader Winter Funeral Home handling the services. And now we're going to continue with the Cincinnati Enquirer. And this, again, is for February the 7th, and we're going to turn to the horoscopes for today. And we're going to start with Taurus. We'll start with Aries. That's March 21st to April the 19th. Seeking a different kind of status, impromptu career moves flatter your reputation. If you're a Taurus, April 20th to May 20th, you ache to escape from the ordinary. A bit of excitement is in order. If you're a Gemini, May 21st to June 21st, surprise attractions, chance encounters with a magnetic stranger delivers. Give someone unexpected a chance today. If you're a Cancer, June 22nd to July 22nd, impromptu passion, Venus and Uranus harmonious connection provides proof that your partner can still surprise you. If you are a Leo, and that's July 23rd to August 22nd, finding new career inspiration, a breakthrough is found by embracing your creative skills. For Virgo, that's August 23rd to September 22nd, someone new caught your eye? Well, a crush might be impractical, but at least it's exciting. If you're a Libra, September 23rd to October 23rd, daring to trust, take a risk with your heart. It's worth the rewards. If you're a Scorpio, October the 24th, you see connections, you feel free, you don't want to be tied down. If you're a Sagittarius, that begins November 21st, need a switch up as Venus and Uranus harmonize. A desired change has you rethinking your relationships. For Scorpio, that's October 24th through November 21st, you see connections that set you free. Nothing will hold you down. For Sagittarius, November 22nd to December 21st, need a switch up of Venus and Uranus harmonize a desire for change, and it has you rethinking your wants and your wants and your needs. If you're a Capricorn, December 22nd to January the 19th, caught someone's eye, you have an unexpected suitor. Their interest catches you by surprise. Aquarius, January the 20th to February the 18th, feeling inspired? Well, creative electricity is generated. Follow your passions and make magic happen today. And finally, for Pisces, February the 19th to March the 20th, making new friends but keeping the old, widen your social network. The more, the merrier today, Pisces. And now we're going to continue with the etc. section of the Cincinnati Enquirer for today, February the 7th. And we start off with an article about the Grateful Dead. The Grateful Dead make Billboard chart history. A day after Taylor Swift made music history at the Grammy Awards, a band formed long before she was born made their own history. The Grateful Dead have broken the record for the most top 40 albums to chart on the Billboard 200. The Grateful Dead pulled out ahead of Elvis Presley and Frank Sinatra with 59 total top 40 entries on the chart Monday following the number 25 debut of their archival release, Dave's Picks, Volume 49, Frost Amphitheater, Stanford University, Palo Alto, California, 427.85 and 428.85. Elvis and Sinatra are currently stuck at 58 albums apiece. Now, this is a remarkable run, made even more special since the group disbanded following the death of Jerry Garcia in 1995. 41 of the band's 59 entries in the top 40 have happened since 2012, thanks to the popularity of the series of archival albums compiled by David Lemieux. He's credited the Dead for recording so many live shows and the loyalty and passion of the many Dead heads. Next up, Willis's Wife has book on caregiving coming out. The wife of actor Bruce Willis is working on a guide to caregiving that draws upon her experiences tending to the beloved actor who has been diagnosed with a frontal temporal dementia. Emma Heming Willis's book, currently untitled, is scheduled for 2025. Dementia not only affects your loved one, but can shake a whole family's foundation and self if you allow it, Emma Heming Willis said in a statement. Identifying the right resources to educate and enlighten myself has been powerful and has allowed me the space to continue to move forward in the most positive way so that I can be the best mother, wife, daughter, friend, and care partner. I want to be able to share that with the next person who finds themselves here. Willis will combine personal stories with interviews and advice from experts. I'm so proud of the way she is using her voice to help others, Shriver said in a statement. Caregivers are unsung heroes in our society. They need guidance, support, knowledge, along with community and roadmaps. And now we're going to continue with the Enquirer, and this again is February the 7th, and this is the What to Watch category. And we're going to start off with the Marvels. It's on Disney Plus, and it's a feature film exclusive. In this entry in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Carol Danvers, a.k.a. Captain Marvel, who's played by Brie Larson, has reclaimed her identity from the tyrannical Kree. When her duties send her to a wormhole, her powers are entangled with superfan Kamala Khan, also known as Miss Marvel, and Carol's estranged niece. Together, this unlikely trio embarks on a cosmic adventure to take on the powerful new leader of the Kree. Also, what to watch? Well, how about The Conners? That's on ABC at 8 p.m., and it is the season premiere. The sixth season of this hit Roseanne reboot returns tonight. series regulars John Goodman, Laurie Metcalf, Sarah Gilbert, and the rest of the gang are set to return, except for Jaden Ray, who played DJ's daughter Mary. In this episode called The Publisher Cops Show Pilot, Jackie Metcalf faces problems at the lunchbox and must take advice from an unexpected guest. Also, what to watch? Wild Cards. It's on the CW at 8 o'clock. After a surfer gets shot and washes up on the beach, Ellis goes undercover. In With the Old, that's going to be on Magnolia Network at 8 o'clock, and this is the season premiere as well. A couple is granted a free home in Lincoln, Kansas, nicknamed the Big Green Monster. The 1910 Dutch colonial has been relocated by the family to their farm, where they are restoring this forgotten piece of history. Not Dead Yet, that's also what to watch, and that's on at ABC 8:30, and this, too, is the season premiere. Gina Rodriguez returns as Nell in season 2 of this hit comedy about an obituary writer who can talk with the dead people in Not Owning It Yet. Her demanding boss and her father, Brad Garrett, comes into the office and forms a bond with Nell, much to his daughter's dismay. Abbott Elementary is on ABC at 9 o'clock, and again, this is the season premiere. Season 3 of the workplace comedy following a group of teachers at an elementary school returns tonight with two back-to-back episodes called Career Day Part 1 and Career Day Part 2, where Jamie, who's played by Quinta Brunson, plans a district-wide career day and is anxious for its success. Trafficked with Mariana Van Zeller is on National Geographic at 9 p.m. this evening. Americans spend more per capita on prescription drugs than anywhere else in the world. That's why nearly 20 million U.S. citizens are turning to the black market for their meds, and while criminals are eager to cash in on the rising demand. In this episode, Mariana heads to Mexico and India to meet some of the underworld opportunists risking the lives of vulnerable patients. And finally, what to watch, FBI True. That's going to be on CBS at 10 o'clock. The Paramount Plus true crime series continues on CBS tonight with two cases, a police detective's investigation into a Seattle filmmaker leads the FBI to uncover a sex trafficking ring in Seattle Sex Trafficker, You're Gonna Be Rich. Then in Finding Aldrich Ames, The Hunt for a Mole, the FBI will track down the deadliest traitor in American history. And now we're going to continue. Again, this is from the Cincinnati Inquirer for today, and this is February the 7th, 2024. And this is Ask Carolyn, Carolyn Hacks. And the title of this is it petty for a host to resent the lack of reciprocation? Dear Carolyn, I feel like the world's pettiest person for even writing this, but it really has been eating away at me. My husband and I are relatively successful people and make a decent living for our area. Annually, we throw a couple of parties, one in the spring, one in the winter, and despite our small house, we host 30-plus people for each. I really do, or should I say did, enjoy having these parties. I like that it gave me an excuse to prep my yard for summer and decorate for Christmas. I'm an extrovert, enjoy having people over, and really enjoy menu and party planning. Here's the rub. I don't feel like my husband and I receive any reciprocal invitations for dinners, drinks, outings from our friends or family. We put out significant time, effort, and no small amount of money on these events, and this year it just feels unappreciated. We also have been having weekly family dinners with my father and sister-in-law since my mother-in-law passed away after a long illness. We handle all the expenses, and I handle all the cooking myself. I'm happy to host, really. It's small kindness for a man who lost his wife all too soon and would otherwise be alone. At the same time, though, I just feel unappreciated, and there's no way to ask for a little help or gratitude at this time for the effort and the expense without sounding like a whiny glass bowl. So what's the best way to handle stupid, petty resentment when I'm resenting doing the things I love to do for people I generally love or at least like a whole lot? And it's signed Anonymous. And Carolyn writes back to Anonymous, I was prepared to agree with you, but I don't think you're being petty. Yes, you have so many things to be grateful for, but that doesn't mean you never get to feel tired or frustrated or taken for granted. I was also prepared to line up a bunch of practical adjustments to help blunt the resentful feelings. Take your father-in-law out to dinner, or order takeout, for example, to lighten your workload a bit. Or rethink the parties and consider whether you get as much from them as they take away. Or list the things your friends do provide in lieu of hosting you. Do they provide laughs, good conversation, a buffer against loneliness? There are many things you can do on the margins to rebalance your friendships and feelings. But what I'm thinking now is bigger, because a second look at the underappreciation complaint tells me you're really just tired, with a capital T. And if you look at this merely as a situation that needs tweaking, you might miss the bigger fatigue and wind up with the same empty feeling you're struggling with now. So my advice to you is to put change on the table. Those decent livings you earn, parties you throw, friends you invite, and support you extend to others are all wonderful things. And even wonderful things can stop working for us over time, or at least not satisfy an ache for meaning that has evolved in spite of us. If you're really not sure where to start, then just sit with the idea that it might be time for you and your husband to ask more of yourselves and your lives. What do you want? Such contemplation is never a waste, even if what you want is exactly what you have. All the tweaks will be there if you need them. And now we're going to go to the Nation and World section. And again, this is for the Cincinnati Inquirer. And this is for February the 7th, 2024. And we're going to start with an article that's entitled, Aid Package for Israel Fails to Pass in the House. Another setback dealt to GOP leaders. Kevin Fricking of the Associated Press writes this, again in the Cincinnati Inquirer. A bill to provide Israel with more military aid was defeated on Tuesday in the House, spoiling Speaker Mike Johnson's attempt to separate Israel from other national security priorities, including helping Ukraine defend itself from Russia's military and deterring crossings at the U.S.-Mexican border. The vote gave individual lawmakers another chance to show voters their support for Israel and could be used on the campaign trail to criticize those who voted against it. But it did little to generate momentum towards passage of a final emergency spending package. It was also the second setback of the day for the House Republican leaders. Just minutes before the vote, their drive to impeach Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas fell short due to opposition from three House Republicans. The House had already gone on record in support of an Israel aid package. Johnson brought that package up in November on one of his first days as the new House Speaker. The vote was in response to Hamas and other militants killing about 1,200 people, mostly civilians, and taking captive some 240 men, women, and children in the October 7th attack. Last year's measure also included budget cuts to the Internal Revenue Service. This time, there were no attempts to offset the new spending, which ended up alienating some of the Republican members concerned about federal deficits. Meanwhile, Democrats largely remained opposed, concerned passage of the bill would leave no way to get Ukraine more aid. The bill did manage to gain more Democratic support than during November's vote, but not nearly enough to pass. Johnson resorted to moving the bill through an expedited process that requires a two-thirds majority for passage. That's because Republicans were unlikely to even muster the simple majority needed to set the term for the bill's debate. Such a procedural vote is generally a routine matter, but has become problematic for the current Republican majority, which can generally afford to lose only three Republicans on party line votes. The vote for more Israel aid was 250 to 180, well short of the two-thirds threshold necessary for passage. 14 Republicans ended up voting against the bill, concerned about the lack of spending cuts to offset the $17.6 billion price tag. That compares to 204 Republicans who voted for it. On the Democratic side, 46 voted for it and 166 against it. Prior to the vote, the White House issued a statement announcing President Joe Biden's intent to veto the bill if it were to reach his desk. And Democratic leaders in both chambers said the only way forward requires a bipartisan approach. The time has come for House Republicans to end the political stunts and come together in support of a comprehensive approach to our national security priorities, Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries and other members of the leadership told colleagues before the vote. The bill called for about $17.6 billion in military aid, that for Israel, and for the replenishment of U.S. defense systems. About $4 billion would have gone to replenish Israel's missile defense systems, and $1.2 billion to counter short-range rockets and mortar threats. There's also funding for the procurement of advanced weapon systems and to enhance the production of artillery and other munitions. To ensure the support does not compromise U.S. readiness, it includes $4.4 billion to replenish U.S. stocks of weapons provided to Israel. There's also $3.3 billion for current U.S. military operations in the region. Johnson said before the vote that since the House passed its first Israeli military aid package, the situation has gotten much, much more dangerous. "We need to stand with Israel right now, and we cannot wait any longer," Johnson said. After the vote, he said Democrats were using Israel to force through other priorities that don't enjoy the same degree of consensus. "Leveraging Israel aid as it fights for survival is wrong," Johnson said. Democrats said presidential politics played into the route House Republicans took in going ahead solely with aid for Israel. "Trump doesn't want to support Ukraine, and he also doesn't want a border deal because it hurts him politically. What they get out of it is Donald Trump's approval," said Republican Adam Smith, the ranking Democratic member of the House Armed Services Committee. Republican Louie Frankel of Florida was one of the Democrats who spoke in favor of the bill, saying she feared that a divided Congress will embolden Israel's adversaries and put our own military in harm's way. "Israel's security is our security," Franklin said. Across the Capitol, a similar political debate took shape. Republicans overwhelmingly criticized a carefully negotiated plan unveiled over the weekend that included policies intended to curb illegal crossings with $60 billion in wartime aid for Ukraine, plus billions for Israel, and humanitarian aid for civilians in Gaza. Republicans said the border security provisions were inadequate, while Democrats said the Republicans were simply afraid to buck Trump, even though they had insisted earlier that border security be included in an aid package for Ukraine. The divide leads in question whether any emergency spending package will be passed. "We all know what's going on here. Donald Trump would rather keep the chaos at the border going so he can exploit it on the campaign trail instead of letting the Senate do the right thing and fix it," that said Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, the Democrat from New York. He would rather let Ukraine suffer on the battlefield instead of being tough on Putin. The time has come for House Republicans to end the political stunts and come together in support of a comprehensive approach to our national security priorities. House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries and other members of the leadership told colleagues before the vote. Michigan school shooter's mother is found guilty of manslaughter. This article, again, from this morning's Cincinnati Inquirer, and this is the national and world section. Ed White and Corey Williams writes this story, again, for the Associated Press. A Michigan jury convicted a school shooter's mother of involuntary manslaughter on Tuesday in the killings of four students in 2021, making her the first parent in the U.S. to be held responsible for a child carrying out a mass school attack. Prosecutors say Jennifer Crumley had a duty under state law to prevent her son, who was 15 at the time, from harming others. She was accused of failing to secure a gun and ammunition at home and failing to get help to support Ethan Crumley's mental health. The four guilty verdicts, one for each student slain at Oxford High School, were returned after roughly 11 hours of deliberations. Jennifer Crumley, who was 45 years old, looked down and shook her head slightly as each juror was polled after the verdict was read. On her way out of the courtroom, prosecutor Karen McDonald hugged relatives of victims Justin Schilling and Madison Baldwin. "Thank you," a man whispered to her. Jennifer and James Crumley were the first parents in the U.S. to be charged in a mass school shooting. It was committed by their child. James Crumley faces trial in March. "The cries have been heard, and I feel this verdict is going to echo throughout every household in the country," Justin's father, Craig Schilling, said outside the courtroom. "I feel it's necessary, and I'm happy with the verdict. It's still a sad situation to be in. It's got to stop. It's an accountability, and this is what we've been asking for a long time now," Schilling said. A gag order by the judge prevented McDonald and defense attorney Shannon Smith from speaking to reporters. On the morning of November the 30th, 2021, school staff members were concerned about a violent drawing of a gun, bullet, and a wounded man, accompanied by desperate phrases on Ethan Crumley's math assignment. His parents were called to the school for a meeting, but they didn't take the boy home. A few hours later, Ethan Crumley pulled a handgun from his backpack and shot 10 students and a teacher. No one had checked the backpack. The gun was the Sig Sauer 9mm his father had purchased with him just 4 days earlier. Jennifer Crumley had taken her son to a shooting range that same weekend. Outside the courthouse, the jury forewoman, who declined to give her name, said jurors were influenced by evidence that Jennifer Crumley was the last adult to possess the gun. "That really hammered it home," she told reporters. Indeed, the jury saw images of Jennifer Crumley leaving the shooting range with the gun in a box. "You saw your son shoot the last practice round before the school shooting on November the 30th. You saw how he stood. He knew how to use the gun," Assistant Prosecutor Mark Keast said while cross-examining the mother last week. "Yes, he did," Jennifer Crumley replied. In her closing argument Friday, McDonald said she filed the unprecedented charges because of the unique facts leading up to the massacre. School officials insisted they would not have agreed to keep Ethan Crumley on campus that day if the parents had shared information about the new gun, which the boy had on social media called his beauty. The words with the disturbing drawing said, "The thoughts won't stop. Help me. The world is dead. My life is useless." He literally drew a picture of what he was going to do, McDonald said. "It says, help me." Besides 17-year-old Justin Schilling and 17-year-old Madison Baldwin, Hannah St. Juliana, 14, and Tate Meyer, 16, were also killed. 7 people were wounded in the attack. Ethan Crumley is now 17. He pled guilty to murder and terrorism and is currently serving a life sentence. Jennifer Crumley told jurors that it was her husband's job to keep track of the gun. She also said she saw no signs of mental distress in her son. "We would talk. We did a lot of things together," she testified. "I trusted him, and I felt I had an open door. He could come to me about anything." In a journal found by police, Ethan Crumley wrote that his parents wouldn't listen to his pleas for help. "I have zero help for my mental problems, and it's causing me to shoot up the school," he wrote. Prosecutors introduced evidence that Ethan Crumley texted his mother in spring of 2021 about demons throwing bowls and other hallucinations, but she told the jury that it was just Ethan messing around. "I have asked myself if I would have done anything differently. I wouldn't have. I wish he would have killed us instead," she testified. The jury of 6 men and 6 women included people who own guns or grew up with them in their own homes. Jennifer Crumley will get credit for roughly 2.5 years in the county jail when she returns to court for sentencing on April the 9th. The judge will set the minimum prison sentence based on scoring guidelines and other factors. It's going to be up to the Michigan Parole Board to determine how long she actually stays in prison. The maximum term for involuntary manslaughter is currently 15 years. Prosecutors have not said if they will ask for consecutive sentences on the 4 convictions, which could mean a maximum of 60 years if Judge Cheryl Matthews agrees. Continuing with the Cincinnati Enquirer's Nation and World section, and this again is for today, being February the 7th, 2024, and this article is entitled, "Mayorkas Survives Vote to Impeach, Attempt Thwarted by Republican Defections." Lisa Mascaro writes this for the Associated Press. In a dramatic setback, House Republicans failed Tuesday to impeach Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. They were forced to shelf a high-profile priority for now after a few GOP lawmakers refused to go along with the party's plan. The stunning roll call fell just a single vote short of impeaching Mayorkas, stalling the Republicans' drive to punish the Biden administration over its handling of the U.S.-Mexico border. With Democrats united against the charges, the Republicans needed almost every vote from their slim majority to approve the articles of impeachment. In a dramatic, rowdy scene on the House floor, the vote was tied for several minutes, 215-215. Several Republican lawmakers, led by the impeachment's chief sponsor, Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, surrounded one of the holdouts, Wisconsin Republican Mike Gallagher, who refused to change his vote. With the tally stuck, Democrats shouted for the gavel to close out the vote. The House is likely, though, to revisit plans to impeach Mayorkas, but next steps are highly uncertain at this time. In the end, 3 Republicans opposed the impeachment, and a 4th Republican switched his vote so the measure could be revisited. The final tally ended up being 214-216. "Frustrated," said Republican Mark Green, a Republican from Tennessee. He's the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee, but we'll see it back again. House Speaker Mike Johnson, who could lose only a few Republicans from his slim majority, had said earlier he had personally spoken to Gallagher and another GOP holdout, acknowledging the heavy, heavy vote as he sought their support. Not since 1876 has a cabinet secretary faced impeachment charges, and it's the first time a sitting secretary is being impeached. 148 years ago, Secretary of War William Belknap resigned just before the vote. The impeachment charges against Mayorkas come as the border security is fast becoming the top political issue in the 2024 election, a particularly potent line of attack being leveled at President Joe Biden by the Republicans, led by the party's frontrunner for the presidential nomination, Donald Trump. Record numbers have been arriving at the southern border, many fleeing countries around the world, in what Mayorkas calls an era of global migration. Many migrants are claiming asylum and being conditionally released into the U.S., arriving in cities that are under-equipped to provide housing and other aid while they await judicial proceedings, which can take years to determine whether they may remain. The House Democrats united against the two articles of impeachment against Mayorkas, calling the proceedings a sham designed to please Trump, charges that do not rise to the Constitution's bar of treason, bribery, or high crimes and misdemeanors. "It's a bunch of garbage," said Republican Jim McGovern. He's a Democrat from Massachusetts. He called Mayorkas a good man and a decent man who is simply trying to do his job. Even if Republicans are able to impeach Mayorkas, he is not expected to be convicted in a Senate trial, since Republican senators have been cool to the effort. The Senate could simply refer the matter to a committee for its own investigation, delaying any immediate action. The three Republicans opposing impeachment were Gallagher, Republican Ken Buck of Colorado, and Tom McClintock of California, who said the charges, quote, "failed to identify an impeachable crime that Mayorkas has committed," end of quote. The conservative McClintock said in a lengthy memo that the articles of impeachment from the committee explain the problems at the border under Biden's watch, but he said they stretch and distort the Constitution of the United States. Republican Blake Moore of Utah was the Republican who switched his vote on procedural grounds. The impeachment of Mayorkas landed quickly onto the House agenda after GOP efforts to impeach Biden over the business dealings of his son Hunter Biden hit a lull, and the investigation into the Biden family dragged on. The Committee on Homeland Security under Chairman Green had been investigating the secretary for much of the past year, including probing the flow of deadly fentanyl into the United States. But a resolution from Georgia Rep. Green pushed it to the foray. The panel swiftly held a pair of hearings in January before announcing the two articles of impeachment against Mayorkas. Unlike other moments in impeachment history, the arguments played out to an almost empty chamber without the fervor of solemnity in the past proceedings. Green, who was named to be one of the impeachment managers if there is a Senate trial, rose to blame Mayorkas for the invasion of migrants coming into the U.S. Republican Eli Crane of Arizona and Mayorkas had committed a dereliction of duty. Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries said the Mayorkas impeachment vote was a stunt designed by Republicans to sow chaos and confusion and appease Trump rather than to govern. "No reasonable American can conclude that you're making life better for them by this sham impeachment," Jeffries said. Three former secretaries of the Department of Homeland Security, Michael Chertoff, Janet Napolitano, and Jen Johnson, said in a letter Tuesday that impeaching the cabinet official over policy disputes would jeopardize our national security. Republican Blake Moore of Utah switched his vote strictly on procedural grounds. And from the financial markets, again, this from Cincinnati Inquirer for February the 7th, "Wall Street ticks higher as bond market calms." Stan Klo writes this for the Associated Press. "Wall Street drifted higher through a quiet Tuesday as the bond market calmed down following some sharp swings. The S&P 500 rose 11.42 points, or 0.2%, to 4,954.23 and nearly returned to its all-time high set at the end of last week. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 141.24, or 0.4%, to 38,521.36, and the NASDAQ composite edged up by 11.32, or 0.1%, to 15,609. Stocks have been under some pressure recently as hints keep coming that the Federal Reserve likely won't deliver cuts to interest rates as soon as traders had hoped. The economy has remained remarkably solid, even though the Feds had jacked up rates to slow it down and to slow inflation down. That has pushed some forecasts for the first easings of rates from March until possibly the summer. If easier interest rates in the short term won't boost stock prices, the hope is that strong profits by companies will. GE Healthcare Technologies was the day's best performer in the S&P. That jumped 11.6% after reporting healthier profit and revenue for the latest quarter than analysts expected. Palantir Technologies, one of the companies that's been riding a frenzy on Wall Street around artificial intelligence, that soared 30.8% after its results from the latest quarter roughly matched analyst expectations. The data analytics company brought in slightly more revenue than analysts expected, and its CEO said it's seeing surging demands from all AI platforms. Streaming music and podcast platform Spotify climbed 3.9% after it reported stronger than expected growth in its subscriber base, even as revenue missed analyst targets. Well, that concludes the second hour of the Cincinnati Inquirer. And again, this is for Wednesday, and it is February 7th, 2024. My name is Mary McConnell. Thank you.